We'll call the Agriculture and Rural Development Committee meeting to order. They have 2:30 p.m. having arrived. We have two bills up today, House File 719 and House File 1211. We should have an author here somewhere. There he is. Representative Erdahl is here to present his two bills. It's Representative Erdahl Day at the Capitol today, and we're very honored to have him here. So with that, Representative Erdahl will start with the testimony. We will not actually move the bill at this point because we do not have a quorum. As soon as we do have a quorum, we will officially call the meeting to order. Before we start the bill, is there anyone in the audience that would wish to testify against House File 719? Seeing no one, Representative Erdahl, that means we get the Reader's Digest version and witnesses. I'd say since nobody's against and everybody's for it, it probably has a pretty good chance of success today, Representative Erdahl. Where would it go after this committee, sir?
I believe that Representative Krenke would like to see the bill.
Straight to the Tax Committee. Okay, thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl, if you could please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is House File 719, Investment Tax Credits for Dairy. And I will just run through a few of my pages. I'll do it quickly today. Why do we need to be concerned about the dairy industry in Minnesota? First of all, there have been problems in the industry, sustaining low milk prices. There's a continued exodus of dairy farmers. From 1970 to 2002, Minnesota lost over 39,000 dairy farms, from 46,000 to 6,800. My home county of Meeker, there were 1,400 dairies in 1960. Today, there are fewer than 100. There's a loss of production. Minnesota milk production has declined an average of 0.4% per year, while U.S. milk production grew at 1.2% per year. Dairy cows are very environmentally friendly. Without dairy cows, lands will most likely be put into traditional row crops that have erosion control issues. According to a study by Dr. Joe Conlon, retired professor from the University of Minnesota, the dairy industry in Minnesota supports over 54,000 jobs. And dairy impacts the Minnesota economy at the rate of $2.7 billion annually. Dairy cows in Minnesota consume 60 million bushels of corn, 545,000 tons of corn silage, 2.45 million tons of hay, and 400,000 tons of protein supplement. Each 1,000 cows within a community contributes approximately 2,694,000 farm income and employs 12 people. This bill provides a tax credit with investments on investments by the farmer of up to $1 million, up to $500,000. It's a 10% credit, $50,000 spread out over 15 years, up to $1 million, where the credit declines the amount of the credit from $500,000 up to $1,075,000 being the cap. This is a governor's initiative in the governor's budget. The amount is capped at $2.9 million for the first year. And this would be about a $30 million revitalization in rural Minnesota if the credits were taken as predicted. $35 million in 2007 and $40 million in 2008. I do have an amendment that when we are have a quorum, we will insert that basically sets up a procedure in just in case more claims are made than the money available in that first year. Basically, the way it works, if you are a dairy farmer, you make an investment in 2005. On January 31st of January 2006, you would settle up the amounts with the Department of Revenue, the credits claimed. So you make the claims in 06 on an 05 investment, and basically the money then comes back over 15 years, because if a farmer does not have the taxable income in 1 year, that may be moved on, pushed into the future. You have 15 years to make the credits available. Mr. Chairman?
Thank you. Okay, we'll bring up now to testify on behalf of the bill, and there's no one to testify against the bill, Mr. Jim Borboom from the Department of Agriculture, Assistant Commissioner. No. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I am Jim Borboom, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'm here just to give you a little bit of a background. Representative Erdahl did mention that this is part of the governor's initiative. Talk a little bit about why that is part of the governor's initiative, and then also a quick estimate of how we arrived at the cost estimates that are in the bill. Representative Erdahl did talk about the contributions of the dairy industry, and we've got people here from the industry that can talk a little bit about that. But as many of you know, the governor did appoint a 14-member livestock task force. They issued their report in June of 2004. That task force included members from the livestock industry as well as ag finance, producer organizations, and state government. And essentially the finding in that report said that the Minnesota's animal agriculture suffers from lack of on-farm investment, and that in order for farmers to compete in today's marketplace, especially dairy farmers to compete in today's marketplace, that they need to find ways or resources to improve those investments for beginning farmers as well as existing farm families. And so it was part of the governor's initiative to provide a tax credit on financial assistance to livestock operations and modernizing and reinvesting in those facilities. And the governor's proposal starts with dairy farmers, recognizing the critical need that dairy farmers have. His proposal is a new investment credit for dairy farms, again a 10% credit, up to a $30,000 credit against the tax liability. The purchase would start, or the eligibility would start, on January 1 of 2006 and continue through December 31 of 2011. And again, there would be a 15-year carry forward. So if you use the credit in 1 year, you would have 15 years to continue using that credit. We had a lot of challenges in trying to come up with the fiscal cost or the cost estimates for it. And in just a brief survey that we did with our dairy producers, we estimated that about 25% of the dairy farmers in Minnesota would use this investment credit, or about 1,400 dairy farmers a year. Farmers also indicated that the annual investment that they would make would be somewhere in the range of $50,000 to $100,000, and they also felt that a 10% credit would be the level that would attract them to make these investments. They also said that their preference was to focus on investments that would increase production, increase efficiency in their operation, and also improve environmental performance. So, Mr. Chairman and members, that's just a little bit of the background of how we got to the governor's initiative and also on the cost estimates for the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Borboom. Before we go into questions for Mr. Borboom, we will officially call the meeting of the Agricultural Development Committee to order. Representative Welty moves the minutes of Tuesday, March 1st. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion barely passes. Okay, now we have before us an amendment. Let's get the bill in the order the author would like. Representative Erdahl moves the H071982 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, now we have the bill before us as the author would like, and the motion is to Representative Erdahl's move that we move 719 as amended to
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Erdahl.
I'd like to add a small oral amendment here, if I could.
Okay, Representative Erdahl.
And that's to add on page 2 of the bill, after line 24, number 13, pastures, and number 14, on-farm processing.
Okay, could you please repeat that, Representative Erdahl?
I want to add a 13 and 14 to the list of those things that would qualify. 13 would be pastures, and 14 would be on-farm processing.
We're on the bill as amended. Does it work? Okay, Mr. Rankin, can you please state the amendment for us?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, the amendment that the author is requesting, page 2, line 23, delete the and. Page 2, after line 24, insert the number 13 in parentheses and the word pastures, semicolon, and a new line, the number 14 in parentheses, on-farm processing, and a period. As Chairman and Committee members, we also needed to remove the period on line 24 and insert a semicolon.
Thank you, Sam. I was going to mention that on line 24 there. Okay, with that, any discussion on the author's minor amendment? Hearing none, all fairs say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Okay, Representative Erdahl. Okay, any questions for Mr. Borboom? Thank you very much, sir. Mr. Borboom from the Department of Agriculture Assistant Commissioner.
Thank you.
Okay, George Bakesberg, I hope I pronounced that right. If I didn't, we'll let you correct me there. President of Minnesota Milk Producers Association, Waverly, Minnesota. Welcome, sir, to the Ag Committee. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, my name is George Bakesberg, and you did pronounce it correct. I've been called a lot worse at sometimes, but yeah, you're doing great right there with
pronunciation.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is George Bakesberg, as I was introduced as. I'm the president of Minnesota Milk. We're a grassroots dairy organization from the state of Minnesota. We represent anything from graziers from the southeast to confined dairies in northwestern Minnesota. We represent all sizes and all shapes and all forms. I also own an operated dairy farm here in Waverly, Minnesota. My wife, Kay, I have four children that also grew up on the farm, and our part-time helpers on the farm is Ryan, Angie, Rachel, which is a 4-H coordinator for Carver County, and my youngest son is Tony. He came back, he graduated from Ridgewater last spring, and he came back to the farm with his fall, and now he's working full-time with us on the farm. And we have a new addition as of Sunday night. My first grandson was born in the family. His name's Aiden. We hope to bring him back on the farm, too, if everything works out right. Minnesota Milk is very pleased with the Dairy Investment Tax Credit bill. As what you guys know, this file is 719. Is introduced again this year. As you know, last year the governor was tasked for his recommendation was to give some tax credits to us dairy farmers to help improve our dairy operations or build new or whatever we felt we want to do within our systems. Whatever some people want, whether you want to build new, build small or large, or just create a little more, this bill will help get us going in that direction with a little relief effort from you guys. So NOC has worked very closely with Representative Erdahl on this one in developing and going through the process of the legislature. So we're very pleased and very happy that he brought this forward. So not only that dairy producers feel it's important to help spur investment, it also is something that suppliers, processors will benefit the dairy farm families throughout the state. As their dairy producers make an investment in their facilities, everyone benefits. Their farm family for making an investment. The feed supplier that sells us the feed, the equipment dealer, the processor who procures our milk, and the construction companies who are very most of the time when the farmers build, usually stay with the local construction companies, so they stay within the local community itself to build these new operations. Every dollar that we invest turns over 8 times within our economy, and it works out well. This means that the more we invest, the more jobs, the more opportunity, and more dollars that stay within our community. As a dairy farmer, we are currently milking 85,000 tests, and we're expanding, looking forward. Kay and I have started about 2 or 3 years ago. We faced some very important decisions. My youngest son, when he graduated from Ridgewater, our dairy emphasis is talking about coming back. My oldest son is back on the farm with us full time. He's talking about coming back full time with us also. My oldest daughter works for DPP, which is part of the dairy industry program. So as you can see, we are very, very involved with the dairy industry in the state and very, very involved with the local rural youth development with the 4-H as my other daughter participates in. So we are looking at, this year we are trying to put something together. We're looking at a compost barn. There are some being built. There's more being built in the state. There are some universities that are the most modern technology improvement in the dairy industry, and that hasn't come along in a long time. And we're looking at this, and it's not going to be cheap. We're looking almost at $500,000 investment to get the size of our operation we want to build. So if you pencil this over and figure this out, this dairy investment tax credit is looking, might be just enough to push us over the edge to keep going with this. And with this, it may help. I'm not saying that big is better or new has to be done, but even just an improvement of some of the family farms out there now can create and will maybe enhance improvement with a little tax break, and this will bring them along. In summary, Minnesota Milk Producers Association very much supports the 719 bill, and we're very, very supportive. If anything that can help the dairy producers throughout the state of Minnesota, we very much appreciate. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in front of the committee here, and Mr. Chairman. If any questions, I'd be happy to answer if I can.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bakeberg. Any questions for the witness? Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bakeberg, glad to see you've got parts of the next generation coming in to farm. My son is also farming with me, and he's single yet. But the advice I've given him, I noticed you said you had a couple sons coming in. The advice I gave him was to find a nice young lady whose parents have 6 farms and she doesn't have any brothers. So I think that's probably a good way to go. But Mr. Chairman, and I worked with the testifier here a lot over the past few years. It's a good bill, members, and I think it offers a chance to help the industry in a reasonable, common sense way, and I would support I encourage the members to support the bill. Thanks for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions from any members? Representative Mull.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rudolph, just a quick question. I was wondering what the fiscal impact of this would be.
Representative Rudolph.
$2.9 million the first year. And it's on the back of the bill.
And I apologize for being late. I think you probably already said that.
Representative Ball, it's on the amendment that we passed. It's on page 2 of the amendment, lines 1 through 6.
No.
It's the A2 amendment, not the A1 members. It's the A1.
Okay, it is. Fiscal year 2006, 2.9. Fiscal year 2007, 3.5. Fiscal year 2008, 4.
Representative Ball.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Mr. Baker, thank you so much, sir.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, thank you very much for allowing us to testify in front of your committee.
Our next witness, Dave Brucher. Did I say that right? Little Falls. Well. If you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Sure. My name is Dave Brucher. We farm near Little Falls, and we're represented by that fine gentleman, Greg Blaine, there.
The chairman.
And congratulations on your re-election last fall, Greg. Glad to have you on board here again.
Thank you, Mr. Brucher. It's good to see you here. It's good to have Morrison County represented here on along with myself on this fine piece of legislation too, but Mr. Brucher, please continue with your testimony.
That's okay. Yeah, I want to thank you for having me. I want to also thank Bob LaFay for the fine job he's done for Minnesota milk producers. He works very hard, and sometimes he doesn't get all the appreciation that he deserves. I got a fine gentleman there. Again, my name is Dave Brucher. We farm near Little Falls. My wife, Sarah Jane, is here, too. We have 4 children, ranging in ages from 22 to tomorrow. Our youngest girl is 15. We are dairy farming out of choice. I grew up the eldest of five children, third generation American dairy farming. My father learned to speak English when he went to school. Spoke German at home. And anyway, again, we're dairy farming out of choice. It is in our blood. We live on a farm 2.5 miles from where I was born. After college, I pursued a career with a oil field chemical company, first in research and then in management. We lived in various places in the U.S. and then 5 years in Saudi Arabia, where I was an area manager for the Middle East, India, and Pakistan. In 1988, when our oldest son was ready to start school, we chose to return to Minnesota agriculture because I found out that growing up on a dairy farm didn't handicap me. In fact, it did the opposite. And we came back and purchased the farm 2.5 miles from where I was born. We rented my parents' dairy facility with 80 cows. After working off the farm for 4 years, my wife chose to milk cows on our home farm. So it was a total of 6 years that she milked cows there, 10 years that I drove 2.5 miles and milked cows on my parents' farm. And I guarantee it was a lot different lifestyle than what I had previously, but it was a good lifestyle. And we have four children. In 2000, we built a new facility where we consolidated and expanded the dairy herd to 350 cows. We made that choice because we couldn't continue doing it the way we were on two facilities driving back and forth. We're currently planning an expansion to our herd so that we may have a viable operation for the next generation should any of them choose to return. Our second son is a pre-vet major at University of Minnesota right down the road here. Again, we want to build it. I've had a chance to visit operations throughout the U.S., and I feel that if we're going to have a viable, competitive operation down the road, we need to make these plans. We need to go forward. We have a moral commitment to the resources that we're charged with, the land, the cattle. I always say to anybody that works for me, we have a moral commitment to that cow that, you know, it's there in our charge. We're charged with caring for that animal. No matter how large we get, we still have that moral commitment to the resources that we are charged with, and to provide something for the next generation. I'm not just here to milk out or get what we can from the resources we have. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Dairy Investment Tax Credit Bill. The bill would provide a net gain for the state of Minnesota. I appreciate the fact that you are chosen to be public servants, and I know that the choice that you choose is not all glory. There's a lot of you probably have a lot of work involved in this, and in fact, I think you sacrifice some of what you might gain at home by being here, and I appreciate that. You know that we have obligations to that greater than ourselves, and I also know that you have responsibilities to all of your constituents and not just to the dairy farmers. But this bill would provide a net gain for the state of Minnesota through the tax revenues generated through sales taxes on products that we buy, withholding taxes on not only the employees that we employ, but the vendors and services that we buy from. Is that I know we have a considerable tax withholding now that gets deposited to the state of Minnesota, and those are going to increase considerably. I can't see where this wouldn't just plain bottom line be a net gain for the state of Minnesota. I'm not alone in feeling that we have a moral responsibility to the resources that we are charged with. I think most dairy farmers do. I remember reading something about 5 years ago that the 10 largest dairy farms in the United States are all family-run operations. Corporations simply don't succeed very well in dairy farming. You have to have somebody behind those cows every day that cares about those cows, or they don't succeed. And it's been proven here through the downturn. We only survived the low prices because of commitment. And anybody that has survived this has survived because of commitment. And I would really appreciate your support for this bill. Net gain for the state of Minnesota, net gain for society. Dairy farms don't only produce food they produce good citizens. And our oldest son probably doesn't plan to return to dairy farming, but he can still outwork anybody in his field. And so I always say that the economics of our dairy are important, but what is important is our family. And my life is a success because of our family and what we've produced there. I could have chosen another career, and I'm satisfied with what we've done. And I'm not talking about me, but again, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Mr. Butcher, thanks for your commitment to the industry, and you taking time away from your business to come down and share your support for this legislation. I think I'd also like to say thank you for your comments from a producer who is in the trenches every day trying to carve out a living and provide jobs for people in our part of the state and in rural Minnesota, but also your comments too about the commitment that producers have to their livestock, and that is a very real part of our work. We have that commitment on a daily basis, and it's just a very good a testimony from you here today. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, our next person to testify is Jason Moss from Litchfield, Minnesota.
What town?
Benson, Minnesota. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could please state your name and who you represent, what town you're from for the record, please.
My name is Jason Moss. I'm from Litchfield, Minnesota, and I guess I represent my dairy farm and other dairy farms across the state.
Welcome, committee, sir.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, once again, I'm Jason Moss. We own and operate a dairy farm east of Litchfield with my wife, Christine, and have four children, Josh, who's 15, Nick, who's 12, Zach, who's 10, and Madeline, who's 8. Started dairying on the home farm after graduating from the University of Minnesota at Waseca, which was in existence then in 1988. Worked with my father until 1993, purchased the farm and the herd of cows from him at that time. Continued milking cows there until 1997. Got a little bit of the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. Decided to sell my cows. Went into industry and actually ended up working on another dairy. Worked on a 1,200 cow dairy, but still eventually ended up managing the operation and had a great opportunity to learn from that. Throughout that whole time frame, we decided amongst our family that it was time to get back into milking cows, and everything we did for that 4.5-5 years was working towards that. In 2002, we bought a herd of cows and began milking cows again on the home place. We started out, we got a 60-cow tie cell barn, started out milking about 60 cows with a plan to know at some point in time we were going to get to a stage where we milked 150 to 200 cows with some ability to hire some help, I guess a full-time employee. For several reasons. One, just way of life, quality of life, the ability to get away. We've got four children, and they seem to be involved in every sport known to man, so you have to get to that kind of stuff as well. At that time, we had a plan. We were going to start with 60 cows and work our way up. It was going to be probably a 6 to 8 year plan. Last year's good milk prices changed that for us. It helped us out a lot. We were last August, we started construction on a compost barn. We built a compost barn and went from 60 cows to just over 100 cows. We continue to milk in the tie stall barn, 60, and then we rotate in 30 to 40, whatever we're milking again. So it's been just a barrel of fun at our place. This year we plan to add another compost barn, increase our herd size to 150. It sounds like milk prices are going to be good again this year. This tax investment credit is another thing that helps us make that decision. If all goes well, you know, we'll be 3 to 5 years ahead of our schedule as to what we had initially started to do. Investment tax credit will provide a big incentive in our ability to expand the dairy. This year we're looking at spending about $80,000 on dairy investments. I mean, it all comes back both to me. It comes back to the entire state of Minnesota, as Mr. Butcher mentioned. You may wonder why we intended to expand. The dairy, as I've watched businesses, both farms and businesses on Main Street in rural Minnesota, any business that seems to stand still eventually dies. So we made that decision that we had to continue to expand to grow our business, to remain economically competitive. Also, as you grow your business, you acquire some volumes, the ability to purchase larger quantities, which often relates to volume discounts. We want a business that at some point is saleable if necessary. We want a business that can support a growing family, our children. We have two sons that are showing an interest in dairying at this stage, and granted they're young. We want them also not just to see the work aspect of the dairy, we want them to see the fun that can be had, because of doing a good job with cows allows you to have fun, get away, do things. Also, dairying is a way of life, once again, for us and once again in Minnesota. I know we've been told to focus on this as just a business in Minnesota. We've been unable to do that, and I am also unable to do that. Dairying provides us a good way of life. We're able to be home with our children. We're able to spend time with them. They've got a work ethic. There's so many good things about dairy farming. And Minnesota needs to keep its dairy farms here. It's been a vital part of this state for 100 years. Our focus is the cows. We do whatever we can to make a good living with the cows. You talked about the moral commitment that you have, and that's certainly required in the dairy industry. Passage of this investment tax credit will help us achieve our goals as a small business owner. It's also not just about the financial incentives that it provides the dairy farmer. It sends a message to me and other dairy farmers across the state that Minnesota cares about what happens with the dairy industry, and I think that's a very important message to be seen. It's just saying that the state of Minnesota cares. I guess I'd like to see this bill passed, and thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts.
Thank you so much, sir. Any questions for the witness?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question to you. When you have that many cows, do you get to know their personalities at all?
Yes, very much so, in fact. Very, very, very much so.
Because that's part of the enjoyment of milk.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure for the record that no one observes or talks about the beverage that Representative Erdahl is consuming today.
I've been hiding it. I forgot my milk.
Well, I forgot to ask the witness. Maybe you can help me out.
Stop by my office, and I'll be more than happy to set you up.
I've got one in my refrigerator. I meant to take it.
Representative Erdahl, you know where Mr. Maas sells his milk to?
Probably First District, but I'm not sure.
Is it First District? Did you know that they make 8 million slices of cheese a day? That's a cool place. I really like. We toured that a few weeks ago, and it's really a quite a place.
You didn't go.
You weren't invited. Okay, Mr. I think I'm in trouble, folks.
I know you're in trouble,
Mr. Lefebvre. If you could please join us. In my order here is now Mr. Lefebvre from the Minnesota Milk Producers. Eunice Beal. Is Eunice Beal here? Okay, Tom Peterson will take care of that. Bruce Klavan, and then Paul Sobosinski, and then we will take a vote. And I'm spending a lot of time on a bill that has no opposition, but that's fine. Please state your name. Who represents for the record, please, sir?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Bob Lefebvre. I'm the Executive Director from Minnesota Milk Producers Association. I think you've heard from the three dairy producers already here the fact that this is a good bill, and we thank you for this, and we thank Representative Erdahl, who was our legislator of the year. Thank you.
And what's he drinking?
Yeah. So at any rate, Mr. Chair, with respect to the A2 amendment, one of the things that you, well, on line two, the words one time actually does have, well, we'd like to see that stricken. The reason is, one time you've heard, you know, dairy producers that may continue to make gradual improvements and enhancements on their dairy over time, and some, as you heard from Jason, you know, he's looking at 80,000 this year. Well, that's a one-time deal, but know, he's been on a pace for, you know, something every year, every other year. So we'd like to please make those dairy producers eligible more than one time. So we'd like to have that stricken.
Mr. Chairman?
Member Erdahl?
Page 1, line 9, I move to strike one time.
Okay. What impact would that have upon, what if there's a waiting list? I mean, I think there's going to be a waiting list on this thing. So you've got all these people that want to take part in this, and would they, how would that work after the one time? Would they go on the list after, so everybody got their first shot at it, or how would that work? How do you see that working, Mr. LePage?
Mr. Chair, personally, I think that would be a great thing for the state of Minnesota if we were to have dairy producers reinvesting like that. I don't see that as being a challenge at this point.
Questions for members on the amendment? The amendment is Erdahl amendment to strike the words one time. Mr. Rankin?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, the amendment would be on the A2 amendment to delete the language on line 2.
And renumber accordingly. Any questions from members? Representative Erdahl renews his motion that on the, we're working out the A2 amendment, which is now in House File 719, that we delete line 2 and renumber accordingly. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, thank you, Mr. LePage.
Thank you.
Any
Mr.
questions
Chair.
For Mr. LePage?
Great job, Bob.
Okay, now we will go to Tom Peterson from the Minnesota Farmers Union. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tom Peterson, Director of Government Relations, Minnesota Farmers Union, and Ms. Beal couldn't make it today, so I'm going to fill in. It'll be very brief. It's a good bill, and appreciate Representative Erdahl offering this bill. We do think, just like the previous testifiers say, that it sends a positive message about the dairy industry in Minnesota. But I want to make a couple other points that I think is really interesting, that Wisconsin passed this last year or the year before, I forget, depending on how we say that, and is implementing it and working on it. And recently the guy that I have farmed with and my partner, he moved to Wisconsin and moved his dairy farm from Pine City to Wisconsin. And in talking to him, one of the factors was he was looking to expand his facility, and he said, well, you know, they got this new credit, so I'm buying this place and I'm going to put this money in there and as I grow, he said, that's a really good thing, among other things. So we get concerned about that as we see producers on the eastern side of Minnesota looking at, you know, if they're trying to find a farm in Wisconsin or Minnesota. I've also seen in Winona County when I was down there visiting with a producer who said, you know, they've got incentives like this to help their dairy farmers and work with their dairy farmers. So we want to keep our dairy farmers here, and not only that, keep them, you know, one of some of those 15,000 dairy farmers in Wisconsin to look at coming to Minnesota. It also helps the dairy supply store by me, and I live in eastern Minnesota, and they've told me, too, that they do a lot of business in western Wisconsin, and they've seen, you know, farmers choosing to invest in upgrading and modernizing their pipelines or, you know, putting in parlors and adding things. So those are just a couple other positive statements. And one other thing I had a farmer just suggest to me today in looking at the bill I asked him to look at was that on line 22 of page 2, it's just a suggestion that the word handling could go into manure handling, pumping, and storage, or something in there that the author would consider that at some point. I hadn't had a chance to talk with them about it. I just remembered this. It had brought to my attention. And because up here and on line 16, we have feed storage and handling equipment. So just a thought as we're looking at how we move and manure on the dairy farms. So again, I thank you for your support and urge your support, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Well, now just wait a second here. On page 2, line 22, Representative Erdahl, do you have any thoughts on what Mr. Peterson would like there to be? How would you word that? Be manure handling, comma pumping and storage facilities?
Manure pumping, handling, maybe manure handling.
How are you going to handle it?
Well, I'm not going to. Representative Erdahl, do you have any thoughts on that, or do you want to work on that? I mean, if we need to clean it up, we probably should clean up the manure here. Yeah, before you get the tax manure, some tennis?
I don't have a problem.
Mr. Chair, and I do have a comment on that, manure handling and storage, because the focus of this bill is for dairy farmers. And although I know they got to get rid of their manure, there are companies that are just involved with manure handling. And so that's well and good if that's our focus. But if we're going to focus on the dairy farmer, per se, and send a message for them, then I don't think we want to include the manure handler. I mean, it could be themselves. Do you understand what I'm... Does anybody understand what I'm saying?
I actually do. I have quite a bit of experience in this.
Yeah.
And I would think that you would want the handling in there. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Mr. Peterson, what are you thinking?
Not to this point. Real quick, I wanted to add, too, about Wisconsin. If I could, I got this on my mind.
Certainly.
Picked this up a country today. That Wisconsin implemented the dairy investment tax credit. They're looking at expanding it because it's been successful. And I should have brought the article. It's about 2 weeks ago, and maybe I'll see if I can get that to you. That Wisconsin's governor, who this was his initiative, now says we're going to expand what we did in the 10% to all livestock. And, you know, and they're also looking at ramping it up a percentage. So just another comment I wanted to add. So,
thank you. Representative Erdahl?
And we did discuss doing it for all livestock, but basically felt that we'd start with dairy.
Yep.
And also the change on manure, I think there may be some other little changes we need to make before the next stop. I think we'll consider it when we do that.
I'm sure Representative Krenke, the chairman of the tax will be most interested in handling.
He'd like the manure handling.
Yeah. Representative Pennis.
And then I just one more question to clarify in my mind. Are we talking about manure handling for only dairy, or are we talking about manure handling for pigs, chickens? I don't care what you want to handle it for.
I believe it's, Representative Pennis, I think it's online.
They're strictly dairy. For dairy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Not there for my pig handlers.
Nope.
But that maybe doesn't have the quality of manure.
Representative Tremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, and it goes back to the amendment of deleting one time.
Yeah.
And I thought I heard that there was a maximum of 5 years, but I don't see any numbers of maximum in here. And so my concern is somebody could keep reapplying then every year, and a lot of farmers would be out of the loop if we hit our cap.
Mr. Rankin.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, the language in the governor's bill had a window of from, I think it's 5, 6, 7 year window for eligibility for this, and an absolute cap of $30,000 on it, which made it essentially a one-time. This bill, which has no eligibility dates, it's open-ended, did not have any one-time language in it originally, but this would have created it so that throughout however long this program ran, a dairy farmer would be open to it only for once.
So then, Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, is there a maximum then on this bill of dollar amounts?
Yes, each year, $2.9 million the first year, $3.5 the second, $4 the third. Basically, the governor's idea was to have the max on the producer at $30,000. We made the max the aggregate at the total amount instead.
So, and Mr. Chair, does that mean then after the fourth year you could actually start over again with your investment credit by taking out the one time?
Representative Erdahl.
I believe we'd have to do other legislation again.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, we just took out the one time, so that leads me to believe that when year four came around, if they were the first one in the application booth, they could displace somebody else who hadn't gotten any of it. Because I thought at first it said 5 years, but I don't see it. And
no, it's not.
So. So.
Mr. Chairman?
Do you think that's okay?
Well, Representative Otrimba, you know, this, you know, came up to us here. I think, you know, we'll talk with you. We'll work on the ramifications of this one time. And, again, we have another stop, the tax committee, and if we determine that, you know, this isn't going to be workable, we'll make that change.
Well, you know, and Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, I don't mind somebody getting it again, but I would like to see anybody who hasn't gotten it for the first time to get it before somebody who's looking at it for the second time. That would just be something I would... But we can talk about that, because I'm not comfortable with the way it is right now.
Representative Erdahl, work with Representative Otrimba?
I will work with Representative Otrimba on that.
Please. By 5 o'clock. Okay, with that, we will now go to... Are there any citizens here that would like to testify that we haven't talked to? Okay. Now we go to Mr. Bruce Clavin. Well, sir, Representative Moe, do you have a question?
Just a quick question and comment. Representative Erdahl, Tom Peterson had a good point about the amount of investment that might be stimulated by this program in Wisconsin, and it'd be interesting to know, and I think probably helpful for our case, if we knew the tax implications of the increased investment in Wisconsin, you know, as this goes forward to some more tight fiscal eyes in tax committee.
Representative Erdahl?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Moe, I think in my opening remarks I did touch on that, and we feel at least a $30 million investment into the local economy the first year. And I'm going to, run some of these numbers through the University of Minnesota and, you know, have more detailed information for you. But you can figure a sizable economic development revitalization in that first year of $30 million.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Moe.
Thanks.
Well, actually, Representative Erdahl, could be much more than that, because there's limits as to what they can get, so the project may actually be larger than that. Okay, Mr. Bruce Clavin, if you could please state your name and who you represent the record.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My testimony is very brief today. Bruce Clavin, I represent the Minnesota Association of Cooperatives. The dairy cooperatives are part of our membership. This bill is their top priority for the year. They have worked with their counterparts in Wisconsin to get it passed, and so we've kind of partnered off their model and worked this bill reflecting that. And I would also direct your attention to a 4-page handout that you may or may not have in your packets from our president, and I would submit that as the testimony of the cooperatives. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Clavin. Members, we have several letters here, as Mr. Clavin mentioned, in your packets, if you would take a look at those at your convenience. Thank you, Mr. Any questions for Mr. Clavin? Thank you, Mr. Clavin. Okay, and the final person to testify that I have on a list is Mr. Paul Sobosinski from the Land Stewardship Project. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Sobosinski. I work with the Land Stewardship Project. I'm also a livestock farmer from Wabasso, Minnesota. I'm here to testify in support of the bill. I'd like to thank Representative Erdahl for the work that he's done on it and for making this an encompassing bill that includes all forms of dairy farming. Particularly want to thank him for including on-farm processing and pasture development. And I'd like to just briefly stop for a minute. I think the suggestion that was brought forward by Mr. Tom Peterson of substituting the word pumping with the word handling really is a good idea, because that type of piece would probably appeal to farms of all sizes and what types of equipment that they might want to choose to use. So I would hope that perhaps this committee, before you move forward, that you would actually, you know, do a verbal amendment and include handling instead of pumping.
So, Sobosinski, to that point, I was making it complicated, wasn't I? Because if you're handling it, you could be pumping it. But if you're pumping, you're not necessarily handling it. So... now there's a distinction without a difference without a distinction or something. I don't know. Whatever. Moving on. I think we should take care of this very important piece of legislation right here in this committee. So, Representative Erdahl, would it be okay with you if you moved on page 2 to on line 22 to delete pumping and insert handling?
I have no problem with that.
Okay, any...
Mr. Chair, can we keep it consistent on handling equipment on line 16, just put manure handling equipment and storage facilities? Mr. Sobosinski, would that be... encompass sure. the everything?
Well, just a second here, on line 16...
On line 16, it has feed storage and handling equipment.
That's for feed, though.
It's all encompassing. I know.
So
on 22, manure handling equipment and storage facilities. So it encompasses everything, the pumps, the everything. Pitchforks, the, you know.
Okay. Get serious.
What do you say? It encompasses everything. That's what we're trying to do, right, Mr. Sobosinski?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Sobosinski, Representative Hamilton. Yeah, good point. Okay. Okay, line 22, so it would read, you would delete pumping and add handling equipment. Any further questions? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to point out that the Citizens Task Force, which is composed of the Land Stewardship Project, Minnesota Farmers Union, Minnesota National Farmers Organization, and Sustainable Farming Association of Minnesota, also supported this particular concept of a dairy tax investment credit. Although we maybe have done a little bit more targeting what this bill does, we think the concepts that are outlined in this bill are very good and the bill ought to move forward, and we wholly support that. Also, I just want to make mention, I hope that as we're considering dairy legislation this session, that I hope that the dollar hundredweight program that Representative Trimba is doing perhaps comes before this committee too. Because we think that perhaps maybe reaches those farmers that maybe don't have the same type of equity and maybe won't capture the same kind of benefit that piece might reach that group of farmers. So, again, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and we're happy that this is moving forward.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for the witness? Representative Erdahl, with the coalition you put together here on this bill, I'm going to send you to the Middle East. because you can get it figured out. Representative Erdahl renews his motion. House File 719, as amended, be recommended pass and sent to the Tax Committee. Any further discussion? Representative Welty.
Representative Erdahl and Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, I just want to commend you on bringing forward this initiative. I know of a lot of people down in my area when Mr. Peterson and others were testifying as to the number of people going to Wisconsin. That is a critical issue down in southeastern Minnesota. And I am aware that other dairy farmers have left to go to South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, and other states. And I just want to thank you for this initiative. I believe that it will bring farmers back to Minnesota, those who maybe have moved out of the area. And if not, bring some of those farmers from California, from Texas, or other areas of the United States to Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Welty. I'm just hoping that someday every county can be as doing as well as Stearns County, which is the number one dairy county in Minnesota, and that we all can bring this industry, back up to where it once was. This is just a step. I say that realizing that you all know that in this room, we don't solve problems with one bill here, but perhaps this can help to change some attitudes and get us in the right direction, and turn the tide of decline just a little bit. Thank you.
Well, remember, all you have a fine bill here, and really one of the parts that I'm looking at is I want a place to get rid of some DDGs. And that you have to have the livestock industry to do that. Representative Trimba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, are you going to work on the one-time piece before the Tax Committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Erdahl?
Would you think I should work on it before, or maybe when I get before Representative Krinke?
Before? Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be glad to work with you prior to going to the committee.
Representative Trimba? Okay, thank you. Okay, with that being said, Representative Erdahl renews his motion that House File 719 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl moves that House File 1211 be recommended to pass and sent where? To the Local Government Committee. Are there any amendments for 1211? I don't think so. Okay, Representative Erdahl, to get this bill in the shape you'd like, I believe you need to make several oral amendments on page 2, line 26, and page 32, or excuse me, line 32, on page 2, lines 26 and 32, and I guess 30. Any place else? What would you like in there?
I want to add, well, if it's, if you have the same version that I have, line 26, 6 months, 32, 6 months.
And back up to 30. I went out of order there.
Whichever, well, I want it to be 6 months.
On all three?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that right? Okay, Sam, what does Representative Erdahl want?
Mr. Chairman, I think he's right that the two of them, the same months, he probably does want six, and that's on lines 26 and 32. On line 30, that should be a number of years, and I don't, I have not heard what.
Five years.
Five years.
Okay, so members, Representative Erdahl moves on page 2 that we amend line 26 by inserting 6, on line 30 inserting 5, and 32 inserting 6. Mr. Rankin.
Mr. Chairman, there is one other technical amendment that we probably should make here. It was a little glitch that happened when the revisor's office rewrote the bill, and the first paragraph in subdivision 3 is not lettered, and the rest of the paragraphs are lettered. So I would like your permission to, on line 16, make that paragraph A.
Okay.
Change.
So you would go before the if, correct?
It would go before the if, yes, sir.
Okay.
On line 22, the A in parentheses becomes a B.
21,
I'm sorry.
Becomes a B, okay.
On 27 becomes a C in the parentheses. And on 34 becomes a D. Then we, on 34, we also have to change A or B to B or C toward the end of the line. Mr. Chairman, also on line 27, the paragraph A now needs to say paragraph B.
Okay. Any questions for members? If not, Representative Erdahl moves what Mr. Rankin said. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, Representative Erdahl, please explain your bill. Before we do that, is there anyone that would wish to testify with concerns on House File 1211? Other than your... One, two... Anybody else? Okay, anybody... Who do you have wanting to testify on behalf of Chris Raddatz, Minnesota Farm Bureau? Anyone else?
Anyone else who wants to.
Anyone else who'd like to. Okay. Okay, with that, Representative Erdahl moves House File 1211 as amended to go to local government. Please describe your bill to the committee, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. This bill, 1211, stems from the Best Buy case, an current Supreme Court case on the proper government use of eminent domain, taking private property. The Supreme Court is deciding whether the government can use eminent domain to take land for a private purpose. Now, I'm not so much interested in the broad debate. This bill focuses on ag land and the taking provisions for a private-to-private purpose. Farmers who are connected to the land are worthy of special protection. Protecting the future of valuable ag land is worthy of special consideration. House File 1211 only concerns taking actions outside of the 7-county metro area. The cows have literally already left the barn in those counties. This bill describes what taking provisions are not allowed to do. I consider more traditional uses. It outlines what public uses are. Eminent domain is still permitted for schools, infrastructure, parks, and other public uses. Annexation and purchase of land is not affected by this bill. What we are trying to do is stop a working farm from being taken over and turned into a shopping center. House File 1211 also outlines the protocol that must be followed if a taking is to be used. The court has upheld private to private to address blight. This focuses on economic development when a taking is advanced against agricultural land, and the Supreme Court may not address that issue. Cities in greater Minnesota have rarely used eminent domain for private use, and this does not prevent traditional eminent domain uses as well as a private sale of the land.
Okay, Representative Erdahl, the Connecticut case, has that been ruled on yet? I know they heard testimony some time ago. Oral arguments, that hasn't been ruled on yet. When is that coming out?
I'm not sure. I don't believe it has. It hasn't yet.
Okay. Okay, with that, before we get into any questions of Representative Erdahl at this time by members, Representative Junkie and then Mo, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, I usually like your bills, and I've worked with you on a lot of them. I have a lot of concerns about this bill, and I don't know where to start. You are entering into the domain of eminent domain law, and that is a very tight and well-defined area of law, which I work in quite often through the appraisal business. I've tried this in the past, too, with pipeline companies on ag land and how we award them for disturbing the soil and future loss of productivity and other things. And I can tell you, as this bill moves, if it moves, you will fill the room with suits from all over the country, suits and ties, that are interested in what you're doing, because a lot of this would be probably deemed as precedent-setting type language, and I'm not sure if you're prepared for that or not.
Representative Junkie, our attendance has been kind of low recently.
Yeah, well, it won't be this committee, but it will be in local government, or it will probably go to civil law, and it will go to a number of other stops before when you deal with eminent domain law. And just some of the simple things, I guess, eminent domain is used in easements, and I assume this would apply to, in easement taking, we take quite a few acres of ag land many times, whether it's for roads or pipelines or railroads have eminent domain authority or any others. I assume your bill applies to any agricultural land taken through eminent domain processes, whether it be a permanent taking that's given to a private use, such as the Best Buy that you said, or an easement taking where you're taking a 40-acre piece for a road where you have to make a turn on a road type things. And if not, it doesn't seem to be, at least at this point, the way that the bill is drafted to distinguish between those uses. You're just talking about ag land being used. Can you explain how this bill would be simply directed at a simple, Best Buy case?
Mr. Chairman? Well, the intent of this is to allow those types of uses, easements for public roads and such, to go forward. Annexations can still take place. Purchases can still take place. Eminent domain can still take place in most areas. What we're trying to prevent in this is basically the taking of a working farm and turning it into another commercial venture. In other words, an example I gave, taking a farm and turning it into a shopping center.
Mr. Chair, I understand your use. Can you point precisely in the bill where that's laid out, that it's only for, that it doesn't include, for example, let's say MnDOT comes in and takes a 40-acre farm that's on a corner of a road because they need to do the turn lanes and other things, and it's just simpler to take the entire piece, and it's agriculture. Now, because we in the legislature don't get the money forward, the project's canceled, and essentially the easements are no longer needed. Does your bill come into play then for that agricultural land that was taken to now go back to the farmer at the same award price and other things because it was not used at all? And I'm not trying to give you a hard time. I just don't think your bill is very clear on what we're doing here, and you're entering into a realm I'm just trying to give you some forewarning here that there's a lot of stuff in this eminent domain law, and you're pretty vague with eminent domain in here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Junkie. I certainly appreciate your your suggestions. You know, it does, it defines what non-public and public uses are, and in subdivision 3, if more than 5 years after the date of the eminent domain award, the acquiring authority determines it does not need the land for public use, part of all of the land may be sold or leased for non-public use according to priorities of the subdivision, and then it outlines, you know, it must first be offered back to the person from whom the acquiring authority took the land, and so on.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, in the eminent domain law, this statement already is in law. Whenever claiming that an easement acquired by condemnation is not being used for the purposes for which it was acquired, which is what you're talking about, the underlying fee owner, that's the person he bought it from, may apply to the district court in the county in which the land is situated for an order discharging the easement upon such terms are just and equitable. So what you're trying to do, I think, is already in law, number one. You can go, if someone acquires your farm for a specific use, and that use is not then followed through on, as you, the fee owner, watching it, you can go to court today and have a discharge of that easement, and the court will give you back, you know, there will be terms that are just and equitable, which means the money exchange and other things. So again, I'm getting back to the point. I'm not sure what you're trying to get at this. There's a lot of eminent domain law out there, and I think this is covered under that. You know, the Best Buy thing was a different deal, and you're probably not aware of that, but I'm making you aware of it. The other thing, Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, I mean, there's so many questions. Line 23. The price must be no more than the amount of the award paid less the amount the person paid in attorney fees and other costs. Is that the total award, or is that just the award made for the land? Again, in condemnation proceedings in eminent domain, people are awarded temporary easement money. People are awarded for trees and shrubs and landscaping. People are awarded for fences. People are awarded for gravel rights or mineral rights on the land, et cetera, et cetera. So it is, and then they're also awarded a per acre price for the agricultural land, and you just say the amount of award, but I don't know what that means.
Maybe it's what they paid. Excuse me. What they paid for the land.
For some junkie.
So the land and the attachments to it that they paid for?
The total that they paid. Thank you.
So the total award. So it would include then temporary easements, trees, fences, gravel, any amount of money that the city, county, state, or private entity, such as public utilities, railroads, oil pipelines, whatever they paid to the farmer to acquire it originally in aggregate, that's what the farmer then needs to pay back if they want their piece of land back. So I just want to get that clear.
You raised some interesting points, Representative Jackie.
And Mr. Chair, and I know I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, but I'm just—I really didn't look at it till I got here. That's why I have these books in front of me right now, and I'm kind of going on the fly too. But what happens in the case of tax forfeited lands? What if the land is forfeited? What if the farmer goes into default? What about bankruptcies? Who becomes the underlying fee owner? Who do you offer the land back to at that point? That happens a lot out there too, and I don't know if that's accounted for in here. And I'm not expecting an answer. There's other examples too where agricultural land may be taken or acquired by a unit of government, but over a period of time, and I can think of, for example, gateway areas to the city of Wilmer, where I'm from, or Litchfield, where you're from, where you represent. There's certain agricultural lands, for example, in the gateway entrances to those cities that may be acquired for use, for parks, for other things, et cetera, et cetera. And at the time of discharge of that easement or when you want it back, highest and best use of that property may no longer be agriculture and probably shouldn't be agriculture, yet you're going to require it to be agricultural for up to 5 years. And I'm wondering what you're doing to the local zoning and planning folks that are working, particularly on gateway entrances to cities and other things around the state to now essentially be zoning this property agriculture for 5 years in your bill. I mean, that concerns me too, because I that is going on currently in my district, and there are cases where the city has been acquiring and wants to do farmland and other things, but if it does go back, I don't know that highest and best use, it shouldn't be put back into agriculture, particularly if it's used for parks or other other usage like that. So, Mr. Chair, I'm laying out some concerns I have. Like I say, I love to support Erdahl bills as we go forward, but I do think it's a responsibility of this body too, and as members, elected members, to really be concerned when I see things like this that I'm not sure have been visited with or thought through the entire process. And I'm a little concerned to move this out with my stamp of approval, Mr. Chair, right now, because I think there's a lot of unanswered questions, Representative Erdahl. I know you mean good. I know what you're talking about. I know the intent, but I'm not sure that this bill addresses it or carries it out to the end result that you're really after. And I think you're overlapping in a lot of different areas in law that you're going to need a lot of attorneys and others behind you as you're answering questions on this as it moves forward. And I don't know if we're prepared to do that. So,
okay, thank you. To that point, Representative Hamilton, then Representative Ball.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, one of the biggest concerns, I think, in agriculture is urban sprawl, and that's why this is so interesting. You know, you take a look at that. Representative Junkie laid out the point that is in law now about the previous landowner may apply. And Representative Erdahl, isn't it your intention to basically give that previous landowner the first right of refusal on that ground in the event it's not used for public use?
Representative Erdahl?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Representative Hamilton.
Okay.
Representative Hamilton.
Follow up. Also, the concern that was brought up by Representative Junkie was about in the event once that eminent domain took place, and if the farmer was paid or the previous producer was paid for clay or gravel, etc., in addition to the land price, it's just that. Therefore, the farmer should be awarded that additional dollars for the land or for the gravel, etc. And is it not your intent that in the event this is not developed for public use, then the farmer would have the option to purchase it back at the same dollar amount in which he sold the land? Is that correct?
That's right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Ball.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Ball, just a quick question. You put the term of this at 6 months. Just curious how you came at 6 months. And if it were a couple years in the process, the farmer may not have the money on hand anymore to secure financing. It may take longer than 6 months. Why not 12 or?
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mould, frankly, it could have been. It was arbitrary and subject to change. We could go with another number.
Representative Mould.
Would you? How did that 6 months? I mean, just thinking this through, and Representative Junkie might have a thought on this. It seems like it could take longer to actually come up with financing. Representative Junkie, any thoughts on that? Or not really. He's thinking about something else.
I don't have a problem.
Yes.
Remember it all?
I think Mr. Junkie has too many thoughts.
Let the record know that Representative Erdahl is drinking milk at this point. Erdahl is drinking milk at this point. And after this, I'm sure he'll be drinking something else. Okay. With that, we will go into some witnesses to further destroy this bill. Representative Erdahl, I think you got a great idea here. It looks like we need to hunker down and do a little work on it here. So, who would like to go first of those opposed? Or with concerns? With concerns. That opposes. Such a mean word. Who? Who's this? If you would please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, my name is Laura Offerdahl. I'm here representing the League of Minnesota Cities.
Welcome, committee.
Thank you very much. We're not typically before the Ag Committee too much. Last time I think I was here, I was sitting in Denise's chair working for Representative Wenzel. So,
Okay. Interesting
to be back.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Well, the League is generally concerned about any legislation that would restrict local land use authority. And so That's why we're here today, watching this piece of legislation. Specifically, we are concerned that broadly limiting the use of agricultural land, as is done in this bill, that's been acquired by eminent domain, could have the unintended consequence of impairing economic development activity in Greater Minnesota. And although this bill doesn't specifically prevent cities and others from acquiring agricultural land through eminent domain, it doesn't impose a very narrow definition of how we can use that property, the public use of that property once it's been acquired. And so this is the issue we have, is that we can go ahead and take the property through eminent domain through, and the state has said that it could be a valid public purpose to take the property for some type of economic development activity, for example, an industrial park or something like that. But then once we've got the land in our possession, we're not able to use it for that purpose, even though state law allows us to take the property for that purpose. So it's just an issue that we do have some concerns about for that reason. We think that this narrower definition of public use in this arena really does muddy the waters in the larger debate that Representative Junkie mentioned in his comments. And just so you do know, the U.S. Supreme Court is taking a look at this issue, as was alluded to earlier. They did take oral arguments in the Kelo case, which deals specifically with the issue of what's an appropriate taking, if it's for economic development, is an appropriate use when you're taking property. And they heard oral arguments in that case February 22nd, and there is expected to come up with some type of opinion by the end of this term, sometime in June. So that is kind of hanging out there at this point, and we would recommend that the state legislature not start making changes to state statute at this point, when we still have a Supreme Court case that's out there, and we'd like to see what kind of guidance the Supreme Court might offer on these issues before we start changing state statute.
Ms. Offerdahl, I don't know if you're going to go down the road of telling legislators to wait for a court.
Okay.
You know, we're the legislature. We can do whatever we want.
Okay.
And then it gets thrown out by the courts. So, but please continue. Please continue.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's really all I wanted to say today, is that we just do have some concerns with the bill as it's currently structured. I think Representative Junkie raised some really valid issues that really need to be thought through before this proposal should move forward.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions for the witness?
Mr. Chairman.
Griffin Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and you bring up some good points. I'm concerned, too, with the bill on, as far as economic development. And I'll just tell you a story about something that's happened in my area. City of Lake Wilson was devastated by a huge explosion in January of 04. And as a consequence of this, the elevator, the grain elevator, was damaged beyond repair, basically. And they needed to build a new grain elevator. And they looked at areas around the town, wanted to annex some land, some agricultural land, to build a new elevator there. If this was in place, they would have been out of luck putting an elevator in that spot. And things like this happen from time to time. And I really would hate to see us hinder economic development activities that are really for the public good, because that area was really desperate for a new grain handling facility. That area is made up of a lot of small farmers, and farmers are using wagons and tractors and small trucks to haul grain, and so it really is something that was for the public good, even though it was a private business that did it. So, Mr. Chairman and members, I've got some problems with the bill too. I think when we look at something like this, I understand the intent, and I appreciate Representative Erdahl's intent by doing this. But I think you're right. We've got a lot of manipulating to do on this one before we go ahead.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Magnus, did they use eminent domain in Lake Benton?
Representative Erdahl, actually they used a job opportunity building zone, and that's another worry that I have also. Because as we put together that law, we put all the flexibility we could in the law. And by doing that, it allows an area, even if you don't have specific acres involved in it. If your county, for example, has an area that the acres are not being used today, you can ask that area to release some of those acres and take that, and that's what they ended up doing, was swapping acres in that situation, and I'm afraid that we would handicap that flexibility in the law by doing that.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and just a little comment. I think that in that case, and more commonly used, is annexation. I mean, that, you know, eminent domain is actually rarely used in Greater Minnesota. But that said, you guys have convinced me.
Everyone's going, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I'll wave the white bottle for today. I would like to move to lay the bill over, and perhaps Representative Junkie and I can work something out, or we can bury it.
And Magnus and Pennis and
well, whoever.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Erdahl, while you're thinking about this, you know, there's something to be said for I read in as part of your intent, because, you know, I keep harping on 51% of Minnesota is privately owned. At least that's the figures I can get, and the rest is in some other entity, of which our state owns a vast amount of land, which we question whether or not it can manage it, and how much of our budget, you know, how much can we afford to own? We know as individual landowners how much we can afford to own, but the state doesn't. And so I would hate to see them buy up more agricultural land for that purpose. And I am from northwestern Minnesota, where they got most of it, but watch out the rest of you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? I just want to make sure I'm doing this right. Representative Erdahl, what was your motion again?
I'm going to lay the bill over.
To lay the bill over.
Table the bill.
Withdraw.
We want to lay it over. Table.
Take it away.
Or he could withdraw his motion and he'd
bury it.
That'd be easiest. I'd move to withdraw your motion, Representative Erdahl.
Representative Erdahl, do you just want to withdraw your motion?
Well, let's do that.
Okay. Representative Erdahl withdraws the motion that I made. So with that, boy, we're going to do this. We're going to do this right. You know, 100 years from now, when they analyze what I've done, it's going to be interesting. Just for the record, Ms. Hani from Fagrey and Benson had some concerns, and we know that Mr. Raddatz from the Farm Bureau wanted to testify on behalf of the bill, just so that's on the record. With that, we will withdraw the motion. So the bill is still in the possession of the committee, and if you would like to talk to various members, or if members, if you have questions of the author with concerns, please notify him. With that, the next meeting, the next Tuesday meeting, the bills we have up, Mr. Clark? At this point, a Hamilton bill regarding ethanol for state fleets. Okay. And then we also have, the next day, then we're going to have three committees getting together to talk about some bioscience issues. And then coming up after that, we've got some atrazine bills that will be coming forth. And what else do we have?
Atrazine.
What's that? We're trying to ban everything. Atrazine, smoking.
We can dispose of them too quick.
Whatever.
The atrazine bills?
Yeah. I can't wait to get those. Okay, and so with that, good government all the time. We are adjourned, members.